360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
Got a bit of a Central Australian flair this morning. Joining us in the studio is the independent member for Araluen, Robin Lamley. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie.
We've got Bill Yan, the CLP member for Namajira. How are you?
Good morning, Katie. Nice to be here in person with you today.
Yeah, great to have you on the show. And we've got Matt Cunningham from Sky News. Good morning to you, Matt.
G'day, Wolfie.
And we're just waiting for the Attorney General, Selena Rubo. We believe that she is going to be here in a few minutes' time. So we might kick off with the federal budget and wait for Selena Rubo to arrive and talk about the federal budget briefly. There's been a lot happening throughout the week. There's no doubt about that, but I feel that we should wait until we've got a Labor rep before we go through some of that local stuff. Now, we know that the federal budget, well, it's always a bit of a mixed bag, I suppose, and it was handed down earlier in the week, and it seems there is something for everyone. It certainly looks like a pre-election budget, but what's in it for the Northern Territory? Well, from what I could gather earlier in the week, if you're talking infrastructure, there wasn't a huge amount more announced in the actual budget than what we'd already been told about earlier by the Energy Minister, also the Deputy Prime Minister and the Minister for Northern Australia. That includes $750 million for defence, $685 million in health, and more than $320 million for roads. We also got a GST windfall. I believe it was to the tune of about $500 million. There's been that argy-bargy, though, I guess you'd say, throughout the week about, well, just how soon that money is going to flow through and whether it's going to be a few years off.
Well, I thought it was a spectacular budget, Katie. I mean, there's something there for everyone, very generous, lots of money for aged care, mental health, childcare, there's tax rebates. It has to indicate that a federal election is imminent. I did hear the NT Labor crew complaining about the lack of money for roads, but look, I know for a fact that the NT government has had trouble spending the money that's already on the table for roads, quitting that funding. So I don't know what that's on about. Look, I find little to complain about, really.
Well, yeah, Eva Lawler said that she will confront the Deputy Prime Minister, or she told the NT News that she'll confront the Deputy Prime Minister, Michael McCormack, after a nearly non-existent spend on roads in Tuesday's budget. Funding from the federal budget for infrastructure will not be spent for at least 3 years, they're saying, despite headline announcements from the government claiming $150 million would be splashed. I always find this a bit difficult to understand because, as I say, we caught up with the Deputy Prime Minister and he said that there was going to be a massive spend on those highways. And when I'd asked how soon, he'd said, you know, this financial, like it'd start to flow through ASAP.
The money's there, Katie. There's over $320 million put forward for those roads. The thing now is the government's got to be able to spend it. Yeah. So the feds are not going to give us the money until they've spent the stuff that they've already got. So the Territory government needs to spend the money that they have. There's milestone payments for that $320 million. So the Territory government's got to get moving now, start to acquit some of that money. And as that money's acquitted, then the feds will give us some more money for the next parts of those projects. So the onus is specifically on the Territory government now to get on with the job and start delivering some of that stuff.
$320 million bucks is not a lot of money when it comes to roads, though, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, they talk about $1 million a kilometre to seal a road. I mean, we probably need $10 billion spent on our roads here in the Northern Territory. This budget might have been the right time to do that. You know, as Robin says, I mean, you take that road funding issue aside, it was pretty much the budget where, you know, everyone got everything they wanted. It was like, you know, the greatest Christmas that a kid's ever had. And
it's like
everybody gets a car.
We've seen this at a state and territory level and now at the federal level where because of the coronavirus pandemic, it's like you've got a blank check. You can spend as much money as you want. It's, you know, there's no one's going to quiz you about the debt. I mean, you know, here in the Northern Territory, what did we have last week? $9.2 billion. Debt, you know, going to $13 billion over the forward estimates, and it's not even an issue. It's not even really talked about. One day these things will need to be talked about because it's money that has to be paid back. There's a good article in the Australian Financial Review, I think it was the day after the budget, that quoted a heap of economists and said, you know, this is all very well that everyone's happy with the budget, but the fact is that one day you're going to have to pay that money off, and that's going to mean that we're going to have spending cuts and tax rises, and it's hard to see another way out of that.
The Attorney General, Selena Rubo, has just joined us in the studio as well. And, Minister, we were just talking about the federal budget and about the that bit of argy-bargy, I guess you'd say, between the federal government and the territory budget on the rollout of that money. One of the areas, though, that people do keep raising with us here on 360 is Kakadu, and that they want to see those upgrades. They want to see that work done at Kakadu. I know that there's certainly been money earmarked for Kakadu, and I know that it is managed by the feds. But there's no doubt, you know, even based on some of the photos that have been sent through to us throughout the week, that there is a lot of things that are closed out there that are not just, you know, they're not just due to the weather. I know that it's not managed by the Territory Government Minister, but it must be a concern for you guys, particularly at the moment when we've got a lot of people coming to the Territory to travel.
Well, Katie, I have the Parks and Rangers portfolio, and we indeed acknowledge that Kakadu is tired in regards to its infrastructure. It has been neglected by Parks Australia. We do need that investment, the $216 million that the federal government has committed to the investment of Jabiru and Kakadu National Park. We need that fast track. That's years ahead in their budget. So that's in the forward planning for them. We are desperately lobbying and advocating to bring that money forward, Katie. Because of that, we can actually see that there is neglect in the park, and we want to make sure that the park is accessible, it is open, that our tourism operators have certainty, our traditional owners have comfort that things are being done in the right way, that they're leading that guidance, and that we have Territorians and visitors alike enjoying a World Heritage listed National Park.
360 is the week that was, thanks to the Silver Hebron, your local lawyers.
It is the week that was. In the studio with us this morning, we've got Robin Lamley, Bill Yan, Matt Cunningham and Selena Rubo. And we are now broadcasting, of course, in Alice Springs on 8HA between 12 and 1 o'clock. Now, the story, or the news, I guess, that has made headlines all throughout the week is the changes, the controversial changes aimed at making it harder for young people to get bail. Well, they passed through the Northern Territory Parliament with bipartisan support. I understand that there certainly was some pushback. The Country Liberal Party voted for the changes but labelled them rushed and weak. We know that late change by Labor has meant that courts are still going to be able to grant fresh bail in exceptional circumstances. There's been a lot of pushback from, the likes of the Children's Commissioner, also from local and national health and legal groups, saying that the changes are a step in the wrong direction. But I've got to say, speaking to victims of crime, and even this week, earlier in the week, I spoke to Shelley, who'd had her business broken into in Palmerston, celebrations out there in Zakoli. And then I spoke to Laura, a soon-to-be mum, 8.5 months pregnant, who'd had her car stolen, and police have arrested a 15-year-old in relation to that incident. I tell you what, I know that there's a lot of pushbacks from all sides of the spectrum here, but something needs to change in the Northern Territory right now when we talk about youth crime, but also when we talk about young people who are out on the streets late at night. We've got a real issue, and I don't know whether this is going to go far enough in terms of correcting this issue, but something needed to change.
Well, Katie, look, it's a good start. It's a move in the right direction, at least. It might provide the circuit breaker we need to stop this bail, reoffending bail. And so many times I've seen the police pick up a kid for break and enter, go back and process him or her. An hour later, they're back on the street, and an hour later, the police are picking him up again. This may go some way to stopping that, but the inclusion of exceptional circumstance, and there's already some case law around this in Supreme Court, it will be used by the legal fraternity, and we know that the legal fraternity, their job is, particularly defence, is to work for their client and do everything they can to get them not into custody. So they'll use this to their advantage, and we'll see kids back out on the street, maybe a little bit slower than previously, but they're going to be back out in the street, have no doubt.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that is the worry from the victim perspective. Selena, was this change brought in because the Cabinet was in disagreement on these changes?
No, Kate, it's the challenge of government to be able to balance, I guess, the needs and the expectations that come from a community. And as you mentioned, talking about this particular topic, we have such a diverse range of interest in this particular area, but also views and perspectives. And, of course, our professional experts who are doing the wraparound support for young people, our legal professionals, and, as you mentioned, front and centre victims of crime. So it is a big challenge to be able to balance those needs and expectations from all of the communities across the NT who have been experiencing some of these, horrible incidents of crime. So how do we deal with that as a government? So the work that we've been able to do, it's a multi-agency led approach. So we've had Attorney General's Department, Police, Fire, Emergency Services, Territory Families leading this legislation and the amendments to this legislation. So it's finding that balance, making sure we're able to address the acute end. We're talking about when things go wrong and when we're trying to plug the gaps of this cycle, which Bill mentioned, but we're talking about the acute end with this legislation. We also are doing a huge body of work, a suite of measures to be able to provide and address the root causes of crime and why young people involved in the criminal justice system in the first place. So this legislation goes to the pointy end. There's a lot of work to try and address and to stop crime before it starts, Katie.
You were scathing yesterday.
I think this is a complete non-event. I mean, I disagree with Bill. I don't think it's a circuit breaker at all. It's nothing. There will be no change as a result of this legislation. We were told months ago that this would mean more kids are detained, put in detention, that they won't, they'll be refused bail, and we'll address this problem of youth crime across the Northern Territory in a very affirmative, strong way. And what we had at the end of the day was a completely watered down piece of legislation, a bill, which will in effect mean nothing, because all these kids will be represented by lawyers who will very strongly argue that there are exceptional, technical and trivial circumstances, which means that they should get bail, so that they will be put back on the streets as we're seeing now. This was a big storm in a teacup, and there'll be no change on the ground.
Yeah, that was why I did wonder whether there'd been some kind of disagreement in the Cabinet room, whether there were some who really wanted to see things go a bit stronger, and whether there were others that you know, did feel as though they needed to stick to, that you needed to stick to the path of those recommendations from the Royal Commission.
They backflipped. This is a backflip. From what they said they were going to do to what they did is completely different.
Katie, again, it's about making sure that there has been a balance between the needs and expectations of community and making sure we represent what our agencies have been working on and continuing that work.
I think that it's interesting just looking at all the debate around it, Katie, and the way that people, in particular from outside the Northern Territory, have weighed into this debate.
You mentioned
the Children's Commissioners before.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that this was the issue, and I think Robin's right at a level when we say the legislation we end up with isn't really going to make a lot of difference. It's tinkering at the edges. And Selena's also right when she says we're talking about the very pointy end of the problem here, right? And the problem starts, and Robin and Bill would see it all the time. Selena would have seen it. You see it on the streets of Alice Springs. You see it on the streets of Tennant Creek, right? And what happens there is where the problem begins, and yet no one ever really wants to talk about that part of the problem. You never hear the National Children's Commissioner weigh in on why there are 7-year-old kids wandering around the streets of Alice Springs at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Child protection issue.
In 2016, Paul Toohey wrote a story about that happening in Tennant Creek. He's covered that for years, right?
Yes.
And the National Children's Commissioner at the time, who was Megan Mitchell, rang Paul Toohey after he wrote that article and said she was going to come to Tennant Creek. Now, 2 years later, when a 2-year-old girl was raped in Tennant Creek, Paul Toohey rang her and said, what happened to your trip to Tennant Creek? Oh, we never got there because we didn't have the funding, right? I just find it a bit rich that you see these people from outside want to weigh in on the issues here, and that everyone's an expert on what happens in the Northern Territory with absolutely no idea of what they're talking about. Now, if the National Children's Commissioners and the New Zealand Children's Commissioners,
you know, want to do something to help Northern Territory kids, well, I can give them a lot of places where they could start instead of trying to get a cheap headline by trying, you know, to weigh in on what, as Robin rightly points out, is really tinkering at the edges, at the pointy end of this issue.
Well, and anyone who's spent longer than a couple of weeks in the Northern Territory know that this is an issue that's been an issue for quite some time. I mean, I think you'd have to say, though, that commentary from interstate reached fever pitch throughout the week when we saw the Green Senator, Lydia Thorpe, herself, well, having a crack at you, Selena Rubo, saying that I do hope the Northern Territory Attorney General, given he probably didn't read the Royal Commission recommendations, hopefully he listens to these experts. Hopefully they are white, she said. What was your reaction when you were when you heard that this had happened?
Well, Katie, I did have to read the transcript again to make sure that I had understood that the Green Senator was in fact talking about me. And yes, it was very clearly directed at me and the Northern Territory government as well. But I took the opportunity in Parliament during one of my adjournment debates on Wednesday evening to address the concerns that were raised by the Green Senator, but also just to correct the record of some very basic facts.
Has she reached out to you?
No, she hasn't, Katie.
So she hasn't tried to apologise or, you know...
No, and I don't need an apology, Katie, because it's not about me. It's about the work that we're doing as a government. It's about making sure we continue to represent Territorians. And as you've said and as Matt said, we're going to make sure that the complexities and the work that's happening on the ground is happening for Territorians, but particularly for Territory kids. And, I mean, if outsiders want to come and learn, if they have anything to offer, that's great, but I absolutely fundamentally disagree with people taking the territory, using us as an example, and not having any way, shape or form invested in what happens to the territory and the future of our kids.
Yeah, well, and what Selena and Matt said is quite correct, is that you've got people from outside the territory using territory issues as a grandstand, and Lydia Thorpe is a perfect example. And I listened, Selena, to your adjournment speech the other night, and it's very pointed, very correct. Lydia Thorpe shows up here and makes a grandstanding statement specifically for political gains. I haven't heard Lydia Thorpe say or do anything to the benefit of Aboriginal Australians. She's using Aboriginal Australians as a grandstand for her own political gains. It's absolute madness.
Well, and then, you know, when you strip it all back and you go back to the fundamental issue that we've been talking about, you know, for weeks on this show, years, months, and that is, you know, the issues that we've got with young people who, it's a child protection issue, but also then when it goes a step further and it turns into the crime that we see
on
the
streets.
And Robin's
been raising this issue and in Parliament this week.
Yeah.
And there's a report that we're expected to get that we haven't seen, if correct me if I'm wrong, Robin.
Into the Alice Springs Youth Hub.
Exactly. So
right.
I'd like to see that report, and I'd like to see
it's
exactly
coming,
what's
apparently,
going on there.
Because, the minister.
Because that's the issue. And what are we going to do about these kids? Because, you know, as you've said before, we've got these kids, and the solution at the moment seems to be that, you know, as of a certain hour, we sort of turn them away and put them back out on the street. I think we need to make sure that those kids are in... you know, a safe place, because at the moment they're not, and they're the kids who graduate to become, you know, the teenage criminals that we all, you know, are so concerned about.
Katie, I think we need some honesty around this discussion, and I've been thinking about this long and hard in recent times.
Yep.
It is a child protection issue, and I think when you talk about kids in the Northern Territory, you very rarely get an honest discussion around the fact that there are a lot of children in the Northern Territory. There's more than the 116 that the government tends to want to talk about. There's a whole lot more. Look at our stats around child protection. There's a lot of children in the Northern Territory that are not being cared for properly, and this is leading to crime and antisocial behaviour, chronic disadvantage and so forth. And you can look at it from different perspectives. You can look at it from a colonial perspective, that it's all about the fact that colonialism stripped these people away, their rights and their self-determination. Or you can look at it from a perspective of now. What do we do about this now? Take away the historical perspective and let's look at what we do now. And I don't think we ever really get to a very frank and fearless conversation around around child protection in the Northern Territory and what we need to do. Because in my town of Alice Springs, our town of Alice Springs, there are a lot of kids that are not being cared for satisfactorily. And you'll hear that said by Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people. And it's just beyond a joke. It's out of control. And we need to work harder at trying to identify these children and families and help them to restore some order to their lives and some safety to their lives.
Well, particularly when you're talking about kids that are 9 and 10 on the streets at night. I mean, Selena, obviously it's something that the government is incredibly concerned about. But, I mean, it does seem as though we need to be doing more right now to make sure that those kids have somewhere to go.
Katie, we are absolutely concerned, but it's about also breaking down what we can do as government and also reaching out to the non-government organisations who are experts in some of the services that they provide for our Territory kids, but also our Territory families. So some of the work, and it sounds like basic work, Katie, but it's quite frustrating. Yeah. It hasn't been done in the past, is information sharing. We might have families who've had contact with police. We might have families who've had contact with Territory Families Department, with housing officers, with the education system. And none of those agencies necessarily connected or talked about the interactions with those families or those kids in the past. So it's bringing together and making sure that our government agencies that do that support service are talking. So we don't have, you know, 10, 12, 15
it's
different
incidents.
It's quite
unbelievable that kind of stuff's not happening already.
It is now, Katie. That's yeah. what I'm saying, that the work is happening, but in the past it hasn't, and that's where the frustration's been, because then you look back and you can see, unfortunately in retrospect, that things have not been shared and that there could have been some collaborative action that's been brought together with government and with our NGOs. So this is the work that's being led by Territory Families, but that is a key part. That's just one example, Katie, but we've just got to get better at making sure that when we are reaching out and supporting our families, and particularly those kids and those kids who do get into trouble, what are the reasons, what are the causes, but what are the steps to make sure that we can prevent them entering into contact with criminal activities?
And we also have another issue, Katie, that we don't really like to talk about, but it's one that's pushed by people like the Green Senator Lydia Thorpe, right? And
yep.
that is that when the Child Protection Department, Territory Families, takes necessary action, but action that I'm sure they wish they didn't have to take, Northern Territory governments are accused of creating a second stolen generation. And it's actually documented over the past 10 years. There have been several examples from within the Child Protection Department where it is said that workers within that department have been reluctant or unwilling to act when they actually should, because they actually fear being accused of that. I just think we need to make sure that a kid, you know, regardless yeah. of their race, regardless of their background, if they're in an unsafe situation, they're taken out of that situation and put in a situation where they are safe. Now, that doesn't mean they have to be removed from their family altogether. There might be another family member who can adequately look after them. But we can't have a situation where we turn a blind eye to this stuff because we're too afraid that, you know, a Green Senator from Victoria is going to point the finger at us and say this is not what we should be doing.
And, Katie, just going to Matt's point, you know, Territory Families has worked on increasing the number of kinship carers. So exactly the point that Matt's made, you know, where are safe places that our children, if they are unsafe, how can we protect those children? How can we ensure that there's no breakage in terms of the links to family and culture and language, regardless of the background of that Territory child? But increasing our kinship carers is a big body of work, and that's sort of one of the actions, again, that's been happening. But, again, it's not talked about, Katie, so I just wanted to share that for the record.
I think at some stage we need to take also a little bit of a step back and look at some of our root causes. Now, most of the town camps in Alice Springs are in my electorate, and I'm out in the town camps talking to the people there. And when you ask the people, particularly the people who live in the town camps, what's going on, and what's happening now is people are going and hitting the pub at 10 o'clock in the morning or 12 o'clock when the pub's open, rather than buying takeaway. Now, they're going in there and they're coming home drunk at 5 and 6 o'clock in the afternoon and passing out. And then the kids, off they go. And that's when we see them out in the streets. So we have a group of people, a group of parents or carers, who are not there to look after the kids when they need it the most, which is in those evenings. So, look, I suppose some of the alcohol laws, I suppose, are being put in place to try and solve some of the problems, but we always see how people adapt, and what we put in place then creates a problem somewhere else. So the BDR has now created a point where people are actually accessing the pubs and they're getting drunk early. And I see the lineups for the pubs in Alice Springs. Like, there's a lineup of 100 people to get into the Todd Tavern during the day.
Wow.
So
I saw that when I was last in.
People adapt. The issues we've seen on Mendel Beach here in Darwin are actually people from Alice Springs coming up here to access alcohol. People in Mataranka spoke of issues around people coming from elsewhere to purchase alcohol. So it's actually quite widespread. So
the social problems in Alice Springs have deteriorated markedly over the last couple of years. Now, despite what the government says, things are not working. Then, from a child protection perspective, from an alcohol strategy perspective, from a law and order perspective, things are not working. And the sooner they take responsibility for that, of course, the non-government sector has a role in this. But as a government, you are first and foremost responsible for keeping a community safe and making sure that all those strategies are working properly. You've taken the eye off the ball, Selena, whether you like to admit it or not, and communities like Alice Springs are suffering, and I dare say they're suffering right across the Northern Territory, Palmerston, Nhulunbuy, Tennant Creek, Katherine, and even parts of Darwin.
Well, Katie, if it was easy, we would have done it already, but we have never had any government ministers or any members of government say that we think that everything is working fine and that we've done enough.
Nothing's
we've never
working
said that.
Fine,
we have
Selena.
Always acknowledged that there's much more work to do and that there are complexities, and we'll continue to be committed to working through those complexities.
360's The Week That Was. Thanks to DeSilva Hebron, your local lawyers.
You are listening to The Week That Was, and in the studio with us this morning, Robin Lamley, Bill Yan, Matt Cunningham and Selena Rubo. And I tell you what, there's a few messages coming through. I'll just take a moment to read some out. And there's one here that says, as every Territorian knows, the only thing that will make change is when a few of the protected Labor softies are actually affected by these offences. Absolutely, Robin. The power of now. Stop living in the past. It's gone and nobody can change it. Now is now. Another one here that reads, I'm not a Labor supporter, but I think the Attorney General did a great job replying to the comments made by a Green senator. Well done. There's one here that says, we can't get a frank and honest conversation regarding what's happening now because the generational trauma is still real and not being taken care of. It's critical that healing programs have an emphasis on restoring, reaffirming and renewing a sense of pride in cultural identity, connection to country and participation in community. So that's just a few of the viewpoints coming across the line this morning. If you've got one that you want to text through, 0418 957 369. But let's talk police attrition rates, because the Leader of the Opposition, Leah Fenocchiaro, says the Northern Territory Police Force attrition rate has hit crisis point and an urgent investigation by an independent parliamentary committee must be launched to work out why so many officers are leaving and what can be done to improve retention rates. In the last 12 months, she says, around 120 officers have left through resignation or retirement or have transferred. Now, we are going to be speaking to the Police Commissioner this morning after 10 o'clock, and we'll delve a bit more deeply into that. When we asked the Police Minister about this earlier in the week, she said that it was due to very competitive recruitment campaigning happening interstate. But, you know, from what I hear on the ground from some officers is that they are concerned about some of the issues that they're dealing with at the moment. And some of those issues are things like the youth crime that they've been dealing with and trying to manage doing their jobs while trying to sort of, you know, I guess not do the wrong thing.
Well, Katie, it's been pretty tough for the police, particularly the last 12 months. COVID has made their already tough job even tougher, but the morale of the police, when you're specifically the frontline guys, when you're out, you pick someone up, you take them back, you process them, they're bailed, let out again, an hour later you're picking them up again. I can't even begin to understand how that feels for a frontline police officer, but that's one component of a number of issues that are facing police. So we've spoken in Parliament this week about police housing in remote areas, remote policing, getting people out into the bush, their conditions. Yes, there's always competitive recruitment campaigns, but we do the same. We poach police from other jurisdictions as well. So it's a pretty open market. So you can't lay everything on that.
We need to dive down and have a bit of a dig into why police are leaving. We're not having a crack at anybody. We don't need to have a crack at anyone. We need to understand what are the drivers for the police attrition rates. If we know what the drivers are, then we can put things in place to help the police, to improve the retention rates, to attract police to the territory and keep police here in the territory.
So what ended up happening yesterday in Parliament? Obviously that that we're not going forwards with this parliamentary committee looking into this.
So during Parliament, there were two motions put to Parliament during the last fortnight to create select committees, one by Yingi Agulia to look into youth crime and this one by the opposition leader to look into policing in the Northern Territory. Now, anything that isn't the government's idea doesn't get up, and that's just a fact. So these motions just fell flat. They were voted down by the government. The government really isn't interested in passing a magnifying glass over anything they do. They're not interested in scrutiny of any kind. I think Bill's right. I think we do need to look at what's happening in policing, given that there is a state of lawlessness, literal lawlessness, in parts of the Northern Territory. Many of the remote communities are being subjected to lawlessness like they've never experienced before. We've got Alice Springs, of course, in our experience, you know, facing the worst levels of crime. How demoralising must it be for the police to have to preside over this? And on top of that, we have a court case looming, the Zachary Rolfe case, which is in just a few weeks' time. This is all compounding, Katie. And I don't blame people for saying, look, I don't need this in my life. I'm moving on.
Katie, we know our police in the Territory do an amazing job under some very tough circumstances. So acknowledging the commitment our police have across the Territory to serve and protect Territorians and visitors who do come to the Territory, it is very difficult work. So just acknowledging that first and foremost, Katie. But there are different areas that the police do look at in terms of improving attraction and recruitment for those police positions, our Aboriginal liaison officers, our Aboriginal community police officers, and the great work that our administrative teams do behind the scenes to support police so they can be out in the field and continue the work in our communities to keep us safe. So I am glad you'll have Police Commissioner Chalker. It'd be interesting to see if the CLP have offered to get a briefing from police about some of the reasons, because I did hear Commissioner Chalker talk earlier today on another radio station about some of those reasons. So some of those areas have been identified, police, and I think the time and resource and the effort should be spent into that recruitment, that retention, and making sure that we continue that support.
I mean, do you reckon it would be worth, like, surely there's no harm, though, in having the Parliament actually look into it and you know, speaking to the rank and file as well about what their concerns are. And I don't think that it's sort of having a crack at anybody or, you know, having a crack at senior police or anything
obviously
like that. It's actually just about trying to work out.
It's certainly not a witch hunt, Katie. It's about just having that little bit of a deep dive into looking at some of what the root causes might be and coming up with solutions to help police, to improve that recruitment, to improve our retention. Because, and look, I've seen it when I was in corrections. When you have high levels of recruitment, which generally means you have low staffing numbers, it all compounds. So overtime goes up. Sick leave goes up in conjunction with overtime, and then unfortunately alongside that, people get dissatisfied, they get tired, they get worn out, and they quit. So it creates another compounding issue. So then you've got to increase your recruitment. So then you put pressure on your recruitment colleges or your training colleges. So, and the downside is, and I've seen it through corrections, and luckily we came out the other side quite well, is that you have new people training new people training new people. And that can be a bit of a recipe for disaster unless you've got some good people there overseeing it. Now, I'm sure there are in police, but it's going to make their job quite difficult and quite tough with lots of new people on the ground. But they're doing a great job, I have no doubt.
The police commissioner, look, with all due respect, the police commissioner is a public servant. He is supervised, or he comes under the Minister for Police. He's a government employee. You will only hear the government line from the police commissioner. I'm sorry.
Well, and it's ever been thus. I remember when the banned drinker register was first introduced by the Henderson government, and then you'd get senior police stand up and say how fabulous the banned drinker register was, and you know, behind closed doors,
that's what they're paid to do.
They were saying something very different. I don't think we should be surprised that the government's knocked back this inquiry. I don't think there's a government in the Western world that's agreed to an inquiry into something that's going to make them look bad. if you've got the numbers, you're not going to allow that to happen. But as to the issue itself, Robin touched on, I think, what is probably one of the key issues before, but we probably can't talk too much about that. We do know, though, that last year there was that survey done of police members, and it was damning in its results. It found, I don't have the numbers on the top of my head, but I'm sure it was more than 80% of officers who thought the police force was being politicised, and there are a whole heap of other issues that they raised in that survey that was done by the NTPA. And the NTPA as a union is not like your average union. I think the vast majority of police officers are actually in the NTPA. So when the Police Association's union is coming back with a survey that has those sorts of results, you can see where the issues are. And I think that's probably more likely where the problem is than some of the reasons that we're being given by the government at the moment.
Mm.
360's The Week That Was, thanks to the Silver Hebron, your local lawyers.
You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is The Week That Was, also broadcasting on 8HA in Alice Springs. Quite a few messages coming through. I've got one here from Henry Gray, and it says, congratulations on today's panel for their reasoned, logical and mature debate on the discussion about key issues. This is a very focused hour and a healthy departure from those Week That Was sessions that have turned into shouting and slanging matches. It's funny, Henry, because we were just talking about that during the break and saying how respectful everybody is being of one another. Now, let's talk about Kakadu. As I say, this is something that's been raised with us throughout the week, and the issue actually came up because we got sent some photos of the areas of Kakadu that were open throughout the week, and there wasn't a lot of them. And this person had sent us the photos on behalf of a friend who'd been here from interstate, from Queensland. Kakadu was on their bucket list, and they said that once they'd gone out there, much of what they'd gone out to see or were hoping to see was not actually open. Now, I've got to say, I think we're really missing the boat here because, we've got a captive audience of tourists coming from interstate. The likes that we probably haven't actually had visit from other parts of Australia before, if they don't come here and have a really favourable experience in terms of being able to see what they want to see, whether you're talking about Kakadu, whether you're talking about Central Australia, they're not going to come back, and they're not going to sell the territory to their friends and family interstate. And I think it's really important that we get this right.
Yeah, absolutely, Katie. I was fortunate to represent Kakadu and Jabiru as local member. It was in my electorate for the last 4 years before the recent NT election last year. And it was definitely something you noticed a lot, and pushing and trying to advocate for the investment, the support, the bringing together of all of those different entities that work in the park and that support the park to make sure that the accessibility is improved, that we have further developments in the park to open up other areas, but that there is a balance, Katie, as well, of making sure that our tourism operators, as I mentioned earlier, that they have certainty to be able to run their businesses, to be able to showcase this amazing part of Australia to visitors and to Territorians alike. And it's really very disappointing to see the way that Parks Australia has been handling Kakadu, and again brings me back to the point of having to advocate and lobby the federal government to fast track that investment, which they have committed, which we've been guaranteed that we're going to be getting this money. But when, Katie? That's the big question. When?
Well, yeah, and I think there's a couple of things here. One, you know, I remember 2 years ago when the Prime Minister got wind that Bill Shorten was coming to make an announcement in Kakadu,
right. and he was so desperate to get here first
that he dropped everything and jumped on a plane and announced, $216 million or something
for
Kakadu.
Right.
And I haven't seen the evidence of any of that spending.
That
certainly when I've been out in Kakadu, and I was out there only a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's just such an absolute shame. And there are other issues as well that need to be sorted out between Parks Australia and the traditional owners. I mean, the fact that, the jewel in the crown of Kakadu, the image that you see on all the postcards of Gunlum Falls, which is an absolutely beautiful spot, and you would want to take any southerner there if they came up here during the dry season, is closed, has been closed for more than 12 months and will likely remain closed.
Why, Matt? Why is it closed?
Because of this dispute between the TOs and Parks Australia over the allegation that Parks Australia damaged a sacred site when they were trying to build a new walking trail. Now, that has been going on in the courts and has been going on in the courts for several months and will continue to go on. And at this stage, they're saying it's going to remain closed. I mean, that's just not an acceptable situation. That photo you guys posted on Monday, I think it was, of all the things that were closed, it said Ubeer was closed. Now, I can't for the life of me understand why Ubeer would be closed, because the road is open at the moment, as far as I know. You know, when we were out there a couple of weeks ago and we stayed at Cowinda, you know, Magook was closed.
Yep.
Obviously, I think Jim Falls is open now.
So are all these spots closed for the same reason? Disputes?
No, different reasons.
Different reasons. I mean,
That one that Matt's talked about, it specifically is a matter before the courts now. There are accessibility issues. There's some areas that may not be open until next month, June, July. Of course, the rangers out there have to make sure it's safe for people to travel. And there are some areas that may be closed for cultural purposes.
So you can't
really
point the finger at the federal government for all these closures within Kakadu, is that correct?
The accessibility areas are the ones that we're talking about, Robin, in terms of the investment. So the road areas, when they're closed due to the weather, but when it takes a long time to reopen those sites, that's where the frustration is, the lack of development and investment in the park.
We've had an exceptional wet this year up here on the top end, which has probably affected some of that. But as Matt says, Kakadu's the jewel in the crown for the top end for tourism. Like we have, of course, Uluru in southern Northern Territory.
Yep.
Now, with our onshore drive market, it's critical that Kakadu and, of course, Uluru and some of those other places are up and running. We need that tourism here in the Territory. We've got our tourism vouchers, which the government has put out, which are great and are helping the operators. Unfortunately, not quite as well as we'd like to see in Alice Springs, where the majority of the vouchers are coming to the top end. But where are the people being able to spend those vouchers?
Well,
Kakadu is the place to go. It's world renowned.
And I think it sort of brings us open. I reckon it sort of it actually raises a broader issue, I think, for the Northern Territory as well when it comes to our tourism and what we have to offer. And the fact is, we've got some amazing things on offer. But, you know, if you're competing with the likes of North Queensland and they've got beautiful waterfalls and they've got beautiful things to see as well and everything's opened and you've got the choice of these two locations to go to, we're already a bit more expensive to get to.
I think we need to address some of these access issues. I was out at Normanboy 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It is the most beautiful place in the Northern Territory. I mean, that should be a red-hot tourist destination. We talked about road fundings before. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a disgrace that the Central Arnhem Road is not sealed from one end to the other. And I think there's been $200 million allocated for that, but it's going to cost at least $600 million to do the whole lot. But that should be an absolute priority of both the federal and the NT governments at the moment, because you've got to also think about what happens to the town of Nhulunbuy in particular once Rio Tinto leaves in 10 years. Well, you know, I think there's a real opportunity to look at Nhulunbuy and that whole East Arnhem area as a massive tourism area, but that also means that you're going to have to work around these land access issues, and we're seeing that in Kakadu at the moment. Mm. I mean, these beautiful places, there's no point having these beautiful places if nobody can go there, so we've got to find a way to work around those
things. I do want to say we do have 85, you know, parks and reserves across the Northern Territory, so there are these beautiful spots. Nipmuc National Park, which is in my electorate just outside of Katherine, obviously is a very popular area for locals and visitors alike, but we do have some of these amazing parks. But our investment in regards to somewhere like Litchfield National Park, $17 million into the Central Valley Road, new camping spots, new and better roads, safer spots, four-wheel drive access. That's what we need to see in Kakadu, that investment but brought on quicker.
Absolutely, and I think to be totally fair to the NT government, you look at Kakadu and you look at Litchfield, which are pretty much next to each other, and you look at the change in those two parks over the past 20 years, and one has gone from strength to strength and opened up more places where people can go and camp and things that people can see, and the facilities there are really good, and the other has just been completely neglected.
Mm. Okay, I've got to plug Central Australia here.
Yeah.
All the tourism surveys over all the years gone by have all said that the number one place where people want to go in the Northern Territory is Uluru, Ayers Rock, and the Central Australian Tourism Authority. Anyone who's anyone down there have been asking for the sealing of the Marini Loop for many, many years, and that isn't happening either. So wait your turn,
Ormiston Gorge. I was out there last month. It is amazing.
You know what I'm seeing here this morning is territory pride. Pride over your location, which I love. We are going to have to leave it there. That is the week that was. We've run out of time. Robin Lambley,
thank
the independent
so much,
member
Katie.
For Araluen, thanks so much for your time this morning. Bill Yan, the CLP member for Namajira, thank you so much for your time.
Great to be here today.
Yeah, lovely to have you in the studio. And Matt Cunningham, of course, from Sky News, thanks for your time, mate.
Thanks, Katie.
And the Attorney General and Minister for Aboriginal Affairs, Selena Rubo, lovely to have you in the studio this morning as
well. Thank you so much for having me, Katie.
Thank you. You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360. That was The Week That Was.